That was Mexican composer Esquivel with Who's Sorry Now?
Hi, I'm Ashley Lair from Germantown, New York. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Acra, Hudson, Catskill. Hands-on and listener-supported radio.
WGXC welcomes audio responses from listeners. Anyone can call and leave a message with WGXC, and we'll play it on the air. Call 518-291-WGXC and leave up to a 3-minute message for airplay. Hear something you disagree with? Want to speak out on an issue? Plug your band's show? Let your neighbors know something important? Call 518-291-9492 and leave a 3-minute message anytime about any issue. That number again is 518-291-WGXC. 518-291-9492.
WGXE underwriting support is provided by Tobacco-Free Action of Columbia and Greene Counties. The more advertising kids see, the more likely they are to smoke or vape. To learn more and find out how you can help, rvwtobaccofree.org.
WGXE is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Rebecca Borer of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
This is WGXC 90.7 FM, locally in Acre, Hudson, Catskill, Greene, and Columbia counties on WGXC.org, which, as a podcast, we go globally. So you can listen to your radio here in the Twin Counties, and you can listen anywhere in the world via the internet or your podcast. If
the World Wide Web.
It is a World Wide Web. Listen anywhere. And this is The Art of the Hudson Valley. My name is Chad Weckler. I'm your host. I'm on every month. And today I have a guest, a local artist, curator, and owner of the BCB Art Gallery. And that's Bruce Bergman. Hi, Bruce.
Hi, Chad. Thank you so much for inviting me first to start off.
Oh, well, you know, we've known each other for quite a while, and sometimes at your gallery opening.
Decades.
And we just sort of blah, 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 but this is the first time I get to really know more about you. And
thank you. Thank you again.
And your opportunity to reveal more of yourself.
Okay, thank you.
Are you a native New Yorker?
Yes, actually. I'll tell you a brief bit of history. I was born in the Methodist Hospital in Brooklyn. But my father and mother, he was an OR doctor, and she was his head nurse, head nurse. But unfortunately, when I was two, they moved out to scenic Long Island, Massapequa, New York. And it was okay, but when I turned 17, I got out of there and never went back.
And did you go, where did you go from 17?
Rhode Island School of Design in Providence. I got up, started off as a sculpture major, then I went into printmaking. And then...
why'd you do that? What was your interest as a teenager of saying, hey,
drawing, painting, it was always, I want to call it maybe a vocation. And my father was okay about it because he thought I'd be a medical illustrator. I disappointed him, although he liked when I was doing the life drawing classes, drawing nudes. That was a kick for him.
Yeah.
Especially when he visited.
Just no anatomy.
Yeah. And then. Yeah, but it's all done by computer these days, so it wouldn't have been. And after that, it was Providence for 4 years, and it was really fun. It was it was 1975 to 79,
mm-hmm.
And that was a good time to be there. A lot of things going on, as you can imagine.
Yeah, personally, I think the 70s was, for both of us, we're somewhat the same age, but I love the 70s as an art sort of movement,
mm-hmm.
that led into the 80s and 90s, and and we both grew up in the 60s, so we were somewhat exposed to what was going on then.
Yeah, and it was a time, as I said, I started off as a sculpture major, and the visiting lecturers were great. They were everyone. I don't know whether you know Alan Sonfist or Movido Akanchi came and trapped us in a room for 8 hours. William Wegman, his Man Ray, ran around the room. It was great.
Wow.
Dale Chihuly, who I really didn't interact with. But it was fun. It was really great. I mean, towards the end, you learn a lot more from your classmates than the teachers. Mm. But it was good. And then I went to graduate school at Pratt.
And you started printmaking at RISD,
mm-hmm.
and then went to Pratt. And
I like the idea of printmaking more so that it was a multiple. I wasn't really interested in, the various states of engraving or etching, things like that. I'm no Rembrandt, But so I wound up doing silkscreen printing because at the time I said, Warhol can do it. I can. You get more images out there.
Mm.
You know, that was the important thing. And I did film and video as well, and art history. Graduated in 81, and at the time, again, it was the late 1971 to the late 80s, almost 90. And I was living in the East Village on St. Mark's Place, and that was another fantastic thing to see. You know, it was like I'm going to go.
And I also saw on your resume that you had an exhibit at the Mud Club.
A performance.
Performance. Yes. Oh, cool!
It was a. I wanted to go back in history. Growing up on Long Island, I think I wrote to you as a very funny thing. It's my my parents on August 15th would go away to some place in the Catskills or the Poconos for their wedding anniversary, and they drop us off with various relatives. And this is dating myself as well, not you. So my grandparents, he was also an ophthalmologist, and she was a nurse. It's the same situation. But they lived in this place called Babylon, Long Island.
Yeah.
And I don't know how old I was, but so I'm staying there for a week because they just sort of put me off there. And then my grandma says, "Oh, Bruce, don't you want to meet Captain Kangaroo?" I was like, "Sure, I'll meet Captain Kangaroo," because that was the time, you know? And so she gets a neighbor to boost me over the fence. And there is Captain Kangaroo, Bob Keeshan, in a bathing suit without his wig, and he had scotch on the rocks. It's like, oh, crap, retina burn. You know? I have only told that story to relatives. So there you go. I'm ruining the airways, right? The podcast has gone downhill.
Oh, no. I was also a fan of Captain Kangaroo and all the cartoons. And
Tom Terrific.
Tom Terrific.
That was great. Really early.
Mighty Mouse.
Yeah, they're always really good. Yeah.
Maybe that's where you started getting your obsession with little collectibles.
Should I go into that?
Yeah.
I mean, as I was mentioning to you earlier, when I was a little kid, the first one I got, I ate Maypo, you know, for breakfast. It's a oatmeal. Mm-hmm. And on the back of the box, if you ate enough Maypo and cut the box tops, you could get a free little rubber doll, Marky Maypo, and he would hug your cereal bowl while you eat your Maypo. He was a smiling little cowboy.
Yeah.
And I still have it today. And as I was telling you, Chad, he had hands, and you were hooking on your cereal bowl, and it never really worked. And my mom found me a bowl, and I didn't realize until about 2 years later that it was a dog bowl. I still didn't mind, and I still have them today. I think the first one that I ever got was Marky Maple, and then the second one was a little green sprout, and I don't know how many I have today.
You weren't sharing that bowl with a dog, though.
No.
We
did have dogs. If you want me to go into that later. No, and I really haven't counted how many that I have. But actually, recently I've been going through, you know, those big Tupperware type boxes and just cataloging them all. I don't know what I'll do with them, but I had so much fun the other day because I had totally forgotten, you know, when you get obsessed about these things, you forget. And I guess I ate enough Oscar Mayer wieners to get a remote control wiener mobile.
Oh my gosh.
And I put the batteries in and it still worked.
Ooh.
It's crude to operate, but it still worked. And I think that's from the 80s, something like that. So I was an adult. But I still ate hot dogs. Is that an admission of.
No, it's, you know, as kids in the 60s, that mobile. The Oscar Mayer mobile, shaped like a hot dog, came to our.
Drove around, yeah.
Drove
yeah.
around, and you could still. I wish I still had the Oscar Mayer whistle, yeah.
I have one.
Of course.
And I admit, I didn't really eat Oscar Mayer that often. It was Nathan's.
Well, you're a New Yorker.
Yeah, and it was actually in the 80s. I lived on St. Mark's, but we had. I met my wife in 92. We just lived together, and we had a studio on 3rd Avenue in Brooklyn, and then I also would go out to visit my Aunt Lillian in Coney Island. Mm. So I ate at Nathan's in Coney Island a couple of times, and so go on any rides, but Boardwalk and the aquarium, things like that.
Well, having been to many exhibitions at your gallery and then going to your webpage and seeing the artists that you represent, and talking about the era and your collection, there seems to be a modern pop art aspect.
Oh, yeah.
And I see that in your photography also.
Yeah, you know, it's one of the ones that a friend of mine in Lyme, Connecticut, was living next to Bill Griffith, the San Francisco comic artist that did Zippy the Pinhead. And
did he do the Keep on Truckin'?
No, that was Robert Crumb, but they were friends. But he did Zippy the Pinhead and a couple other. There was a magazine that was really rude called Young Lust. You don't want to know. Very graphic.
Oh.
We won't go into that, but my friend Georgiana said, he's my neighbor. And so I got introduced to him, and he loved my collection because a lot of times he features roadside attractions and things that are ephemera related to the 60s and pop culture, things like that, advertising, things like that, you know, like roadside attractions, things like that, and diners and funny things like that. And so one of the shows that I had was his drawings, comic strips, daily strips. He's very prolific, which is great because you have to do a strip every day, you know, black and white or color on the weekends. And he's in the Seattle Times Union, the Boston Globe. He's syndicated, which is good. He now lives in Lyme, Connecticut, and with his wife. And the show that we had done a few years ago, I forget what it was that, and I'll tell you something really funny, but I'm not going to tell you the exact location. It was a show based on art references in his cartoons. Like, there was a funny reference to Magritte. And there was a funny reference to Phil Silvers talking about Dadaism, things like that.
Wow.
In a cartoon, and you either got it or you didn't, and you didn't know where the punchline was. That was the best thing about his work. You don't know where the punchline is. It's not always at the end. You know, and that's what intrigued me about his work. When we had the opening, he was staying at a motel north of here because it was the only room he could get. And he confessed to me, and Chad, I'll show you them sometime. He took pictures, but he took out his Sharpie marker, and you know the motel paintings? The bad prints that are on the wall, they were landscaped. And he drew shadows of his little figure, Zippy, on the painting. And he took photos for me. And to this day, they might be there because I don't think the cleaning staff would have ever noticed them.
Well, we won't mention that facility.
It's on 9 north of here.
Okay.
I hope they're still there.
That'll be a treasure hunt for some people.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want to stay there. And so... what should I go back? Yeah, I'll go back a little bit to the when I got out of college, I did wind up working at a lot of art galleries, and there you met some artists. You know, it's like, wow, you get firsthand to meet Chris Burden, Andy Warhol, people like that. I remember with Chris setting up we worked all night long setting up a big sculpt. It was called Tale of Two Cities, and it filled up the room with sand and toys and all of this stuff. And you got to try it. I mean, things that he built, you were able to, when no one was around, like, you know.
Play with it?
Yeah. you could hop in a flying canoe. There was a flying canoe. And he didn't mind that at all. And with Warhol, what I did was for 2 or 3 summers, I collated portfolios. And he was very businesslike. I mean, I talk with him occasionally, but very businesslike. And I was over at the factory a couple times, but mostly at Feldman Gallery that published them. And I don't think he got along with Feldman. I think it was a business. They got along, but it was a business thing. And the funniest thing that I ever remember was at the end, after we did everything, I don't know how you could tell a good Warhol from a bad Warhol, because they were all good. But one of my jobs one summer was actually tearing up Warhols and putting them in garbage bags, which we would send to various land dumps all over New York and New Jersey, because you didn't want any of them put back together again. And one was a portfolio of prominent Jews of the 20th century. Every Golda Meir, Kafka, Albert Einstein, the Marx Brothers, things like that. And so I'm tearing them up in little pieces. And there were two Russian artists at the time, Komar and Malamud, that came in. They were represented. And they looked at me and laughed, and they said, Bruce, you're creating another Auschwitz.
Oh. And how large were the strips that you were making?
Little, random, not strips. They had to be little, you know, like shredding, not shredding actually, a little torn, you know, and it was heavy, it was heavy Lennox, you know, four ply museum board, and it was tough to do that, you know, you really had to.
And you couldn't chop it because then there would be a sharp edge to it.
They could put them back together. Someone would put them back together.
Yeah.
And that was we did put them in garbage bags, and some went to Staten Island landfill, some went to New Jersey landfill, so there's no way you could put them back together.
Why not incinerate them?
I didn't ask.
You just said this is what you wanted.
I just got my paycheck. I needed it. I was just out of college.
Yeah, when you mentioned Chris Burden in an email conversation, I said, well, I don't know Chris Burden. So I went to the wiki thing, and you weren't around for the shooting.
No, and nailing to the Volkswagen, no. But I did, he was nailed to a Volkswagen, and his palms, and I had seen the nail holes in his hands. And it's actually the nails are owned by Jasper Johns, the painter. How's that for fun?
Wow.
No, he was pretty. He was more into sculpture and things like that. Although I did, he had a piece called Big Wheel, which was a motorcycle and I think a 2-ton flywheel, and you backed the motorcycle into it, and you revved up the motorcycle, and the wheel would spin for days if you got it right. Wow. And he did it for the first week, and then I got to do it once or twice. We didn't tell anybody that it was art handlers doing it. You know, it just spun because it was so heavy, and he just really got it going.
Well, you had to test it out.
Yeah. And I do have, I do have still in my, actually it's in my office, a drawing that he did for me because he asked me to go to Canal Street and get some hardware. And I was like, what kind of hardware? And he drew pictures of little locking devices and things like that. And you could get them on Canal Street. Hmm. So it's a drawing of hardware. It's his.
So you've had opportunities to work at many galleries.
Yes. Everything from very contemporary art, like at Feldman, to for a while I was working. It was called Herschel and Adler Gallery, and the only position that was available that was open was in the folk art department, and it was an education. You know, it was. Learning about sandwich glass, you know, learning about naive painters, learning about Navajo eye dazzler rugs, things like that. Mm. That I can still go, oh, it's like a little. It was interesting. It was 3 or 4 years. The thing dissolved. The folk art branch of that gallery dissolved in the late 80s, early 90s. And then I went to work on with a dealer in 20th century drawings and works on paper. She was based in Houston, excuse me. And I was a New York representative. And again, that was nice to see. You know, it's like if one day I'm talking on the phone with Helen Frankenthaler, and she's so nice. She was so nice, a little, you know, and things like that. Mostly ABEX, abstract expressionist drawings, works on paper. We did have a couple early things. And that was some good things. We would do art fairs, you know, the New York one, Chicago art fair, things like that. Janie, the dealer that I was working with, she's semi-retired, but she's in Houston working with the DeMonnell Foundation to have a museum that just works on paper, which is really interesting because she knew all of these, you know, Motherwell, Frankenthaler. One day Ellsworth Kelly is there. You know, one day Robert Rauschenberg is there. Things like that.
Did your art history education help you?
Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean, that could be very broad or very specific.
It's pretty broad. I mean, if you wanted me to point out a Cimabue, you know, or if you wanted me to point out a Bradley Walker Tomlin, I'm being really obscure here, you know. And I do, and actually, besides the gallery, I do own, I did mention when I emailed you, I do own in the living room, I have... I don't have much art around the house, but we don't. But I have it's a British pop art painter named Richard Hamilton, and I have one of his works and a contemporary pop art painter named Julian Oppie, two of them actually of his. And I'd have to think. They're around the house.
Well, you know, you had a very rich New York City background and involvement. How did coming to Hudson happen?
It was pretty odd. It was the late 1980s, and we were looking for a weekend place to use as a studio. And we first went out to Greenport in Long Island. 2 hours radius driving.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll tell you a funny story, too. 2 hours radius. Greenport, nice Long Island Sound. I want to swim. I'd love to swim in the ocean. Mm. But no insulated, wet basements. Victorians are little, not narrow hallways. Some nice 1920s buildings. But so then someone said, try 2 hours north up the Hudson River. No oceans to swim in. But no, I wouldn't swim in the river. But anyway, it was a big, no one wanted it. It's a big, if any of you see it, it's 116 Warren Street. It's a big federal building, 1800, brick, marble, really thick brick, no corners to maneuver. You could, great for studio, great for a weekend thing. It's a money pit, but we were very happy with it, and so we just decided, you know. Initially it was a weekend place until we moved up here full time in 2003. Hmm. No, 2005. 2003 is when I opened up the gallery, and I was still commuting from hopping in the car on Thursday morning and driving up here to open at 12 on Thursday. And then the family would come up.
I would imagine, you know, your rich history of meeting a lot of artists. Did you start a collection, or did you just make connections with artists to
connections? I mean, if you see some of the people, if you know some of the people that I show, some are friends, or people that I've just contacted. You know, this, as I've said with Bill Griffith, or just through, you know, connect, or you know, it's and going back to the art that I show in the gallery. My line is something to, I'll try and get it right. I don't always know what I like, but I sure as heck know what I don't like. Did it beep when I said that?
No, that it was kind of apropos, but you can say that
timing.
Word.
Heck. Oh, what I was going to tell you, this is bad, and it's a little blue. We can, my mom was raising guide dogs, and she got a new station wagon. So she sold the old station wagon to me when I was still on St. Mark's Place. It was a boat, like a 12 miles per gallon Buick station wagon with the contact paper on it. And so I left the back down because the dogs, I didn't have dogs, and it was good for transporting things. And I have to find places in the East Village to park it. And so we were driving back and forth to Greenport and up to Hudson. Mm. And late nights I'd have to park it all over Manhattan, you know, in places I'd have to walk, you know, blocks.
Yeah.
Blocks, literally, to find an alternate side parking.
Life in New York City.
Yeah. And so one day I get to the car. It was one evening, and I'm going to move it. And it's unlocked. And I get in. And it smells like perfume. And I realized I've got a rolling boudoir. I was like, oh, crap. Get out the little tree, you know, air freshener. It was an experience. And then I also got the club. You remember those things?
Yeah.
It didn't have a locking stereo. It was 1977, and it was a boat, you know. Mm.
Yeah, you don't see those steering wheel locks anymore.
No. Well, in Hudson, you don't need them. Alarms and things like that.
Yeah.
But that lasted me, I don't know, 77, 87. Well, it was 87 when I got it, so it lasted me 10 years and 200,000 miles. So it was a really...
It did its job.
And it transported art and things like that, so that was really fun. Again, 14 miles to the gallon. I'm so, right now I have a five or six-year-old Subaru that gets 30 or 40 miles to a gallon on a good day.
So different world.
Like, mm-hmm. My ExxonMobil bill is a lot cheaper.
So Was it, you thought it was going to be fun and exciting and easy to open a gallery?
No, it wasn't easy. It's fun. It's an adventure. As I was mentioning, from 81 to 2000, I was working at galleries. And just to the last one, again, which I won't mention, I was really overworked and just decided, I'm going. I'm out the door. And took me a year to realize what I was going to, 2 years to realize what I was going to do. And I said, I want to open my own gallery because I know enough artists. Yes, I am an artist, but I'm never going to show my own work in the gallery because, it's a joke. It's like the separation of church and state. I'm not going to do that. Mm. It's not a vanity gallery. And I show friends, and I show other artists that I've got to know along the way. Mm. For instance, the next show, it's a little break because I've got to do some painting. It's called the sole proprietorship. I'm painting walls. I'm not painting. I'm painting walls and vacuuming.
And changing light bulbs.
And changing light bulbs, yeah. And the next show opens May 25th, and it's someone that I've gotten to know. Her name is Sasha Shermayoff. And it's going to be a show of, there's somewhere between landscape and abstract, and it was her journey to Northern Ireland, and also, I'll forget it, but a Latin American place, and they're very rocky coasts, but they're almost abstractions. A little bit of, Marsden Hartley, and really thickly painted landscapes. They're really interesting. Mm. It's abstraction, but it's realism at the same time, which is interesting. Very brightly colored and thick impasto things. And then the next show after that in the summer will be Ed Smith. Very heroic bronze sculptures, based on the, what's it called, the Iliad, things like that. And the Trojan Wars as well. He's the head of the art department at Marist and lives in Chatham. And he was one of those people that just came into the gallery one day and showed me things. And I said, I like these. It's tough to sell a sculpture, but he tends to do large bronze works, but people are always impressed to see them.
Absolutely.
And then the next one in the fall is a friend of mine I've known for a while, Richard Butler, who he does these. He mostly paints his daughter and his partner, not wife, but partner. Somewhat figurative, but quirky figurative.
They're beautiful paintings.
He's British, yeah, and he was trained at art school. Although I bumped into him at CBGB's in 1990 because he has a band called the Psychedelic Furs, and actually they're still playing and touring now. So, but when he gets back in August, he's going to start painting again, and so we'll do a show in September. Hmm. And there's a tinge of surrealism, and since he's British, it has a lot rooted in, like, Francis Bacon and people like that. There's a bit, not surreal, but quirky. I think the thing I always figure out, and a lot of people think, is that it's the figure, but way of recreating a different interpretation of the human figure always is good. It's like what we get Rodin and Giacometti, and as far as sculptors and as far as painters, we get Francis Bacon and Lucian Freud and people like that are all Frank Auerbach, if you know his work. Mm-hmm. It's a really good one.
So how many shows do you normally do a year? Because it sounds like you take a little bit of winter time off.
About 6 months, six individual shows or theme shows, and winter is just a group show. As far as the theme shows go, one time I did one that was called Nocturnal, and it had everything from, paintings of actually what you'd expect, paintings of the evening sky or something like that, planets, things like that, to a Warhol of Dracula, there was a landscape show that was called This Land after the Woody Guthrie song, and it was all over the place. It could be, there's a one text piece by Kay Rosen that had to do with landscapes, and it just, I won't describe it, but it was a text. She's She teaches at the Chicago Art Institute, and that's one of the people that I just, I saw her work at a gallery in Chelsea, and I just emailed her. And she said, she looked at my site and said, sure, I'll send you some things. And I sold one of her, only one of her works, because it's a tough sell if it's just a text piece. It's like Ed Ruscha or something like that. Although he'll sell. She sells it, and I actually own one of her works.
I just want to remind our listeners, this is WGXC 90.7 FM and WGXC.org. We're having a great conversation with Bruce Bergman, an artist, curator, and owner of the BCB Gallery here in Hudson. And we're covering a lot of territory, which I love.
Good. Thank you. and as I mentioned to in an email to you, besides the Hall of Consumer Deities, I don't know what the most recent one is, but one of the passions, also the passions that I have, again, going back to art history, is I have a collection of 17th century Dutch Delft tiles that are the blue, you know, and about 4 or 5 inches square, and they're very thick, and I don't know how many I have. Again, they're in Tupperware boxes with cardboard between them, and someday I'll donate them, you know, somewhere. It's just, again, it's one of those things, you just get obsessed about it until your wife says, stop it, Bruce.
Weren't they sometimes used in...
Backsplashes, things like that.
Yeah, for also fireplaces?
Yes, yes.
Especially in New York?
Yeah, yeah. Where is it? Kinderhook, the Lucas Van Allen House?
I think so.
Yeah, there's a fireplace that has surrounds there, and I've always... I'm not going to go with a penknife. But they mostly depict allegorical things, or, you know, everyday things. I have one that's a little boy playing a marble game, and I have one that's a merman, you know, and I have one that's a, you know, like a ship that Columbus would have sailed on. They're all blue. I think the Portuguese would azure. You know, it's a very distinct Dutch Delft blue, and.
Were they meant to go together to tell a story?
Sometimes they're a mosaic. You know, sometimes it's usually the religious figures that are the larger ones. But sometimes, yes, there were some of the early ones, which are rare. There were some biblical things. I have New Testament bits, biblical things. The hardest ones to get are Old Testament biblical things. You know, I do have one. What is it? Lot looks back and it's burning, you know.
Oh, Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yeah, his wife turns to sand or whatever.
Don't look back. What? Oh, too late.
Yeah, that's the only Old Testament one that I have. I think that's Old Testament. But they're always interesting. They're little paintings. I mean, they were repeated, but these guys, you know, yes, it was factory work, but some of them were really beautiful. I have Hercules and the Lion, I think it is, but they're nice little pictures. They used to be inexpensive, but they're getting, you know, a little bit more expensive.
I'm going to ask sort of a weird, almost technical question about size of artwork. I would imagine you have a good clientele that, you know, they say, Bruce, what are you recommending right now? What's, you know, the kind of artwork I like to collect? They must come to you and say, you know, I'm looking for something X and Y and Z.
At times. I think it's mostly subject matter. You know, it's thematic. I don't think they're looking to, I mean, yeah, I've had decorators. I'll work with them, you know, when I need the paint.
Yeah.
When I need to make the, you know, the electric, the national grid. But no, I think it's people, clients will get to know me or know what I show and my taste, and they'll appreciate my guidance. You know, it's like I've one collector in Dutchess County, and she's asked me for like a Bryce Marden print. And I've been able to find it, and she was very happy. It was the one she wanted. And this is going way off the course, but When I was working in Manhattan, I get a phone call for a guy looking for Cy Twombly, you know, the Cy Twombly prints, and they were called Philosophers and Poets. And I was like, I think I know where I can get one, because he wanted to donate it to the Baltimore Museum, and I realized I was talking with John Waters. I was like, I didn't ever get to meet him. I'll brag.
Please.
And I didn't get to meet him, but he came and picked up the thing. And it was a Saturday, and I didn't work on a Saturday. And then one of the other times, the gallery that I won't mention, but I was coordinating this certain actor. His wife's father was a sculptor, and it was very work ethic sculptures from the 20s and 30s, bronzes of like foundry workers and things like that. They're very saleable, actually, like 12,000-15,000, you know, 14-inch bronzes. And so I arranged to get them, you know, created in L.A. They were created in L.A. and got to New York. And again, it was a Saturday, and I wasn't here. And so I get back on Monday, and my art handlers were saying, Bruce, you missed it. It was Saturday. Mr. Spock was asking for you. So it was Leonard Nimoy. He said, where's Bruce? They said, Mr. Spock was asking. And I thought it was Ruth. And I missed him.
Now you work Saturdays.
Yes. Thursdays through Sundays, 12 to 6. Maybe I'll take off on my birthday. The first year I didn't.
And by appointment, obviously.
Yeah. I do do occasionally.
Now, you have a nice size gallery on your first floor. Is the main room almost entirely a single artist, and then the back room is a collection of other artists?
Yeah, the main room is either a one- or two-person show or a thematic thing. Like, as I said, the one was nocturnal, and then another one was devoted to signage, where I had a lot of text things. And then there was a portrait show, atypical portraits, you know, everything. There was a Warhol, but then there was, it was, if you know Bruce Weber, it was a portrait of Chet Baker in the back of the Cadillac with the fins. It was like the signature portrait. And Sadat, you remember Sadat Pakai? So his Baldwin photos, which I own one of. Things like that, really atypical portraiture. And the back room there's a smaller back room. I think it's, I don't know how big it is. It's like the size of a bedroom.
Yeah. A small bedroom.
Two windows, a fireplace, and a dozen works of artists that I show. I have two estates, but that I represent. But my only guidelines are to the artists that I show, please don't show, you know, show 100, if you're going to show something else 100 miles away, don't show down the street.
Yes.
when I've devoted my finances into promoting you.
Well, isn't that a typical request for galleries?
Yes. But being on the other side, being the dealer as opposed to the artist, it's a little tricky, you know, when an artist will do something like that to you and not realize the energy you put into their work. And we won't go into that. Because I don't want anyone listening to that part.
I certainly, from my point of view, and I think from many artists, and I think it's sort of almost a fading desire, is to be represented by a gallery. And I think personally, I find it tougher and tougher for those opportunities, but they do exist. But I think, you know, once a, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, once a gallery is established and has a core group of artists, it's very hard to bring someone in new, which might mean less time
yes,
for the others, too.
I must admit, I get a lot of submissions for artwork. Some of it's good, but I've devoted since 2003, almost 16 years in July, to focusing on certain artists that I've focused on and spent energy promoting their work, and that they appreciate it. Some didn't and left. So I won't mention names again.
That's all right.
But they appreciate, the ones that I show appreciate it. And but then again, I just, and a lot of galleries are saying, we're not looking right now.
Yeah.
We have a core that we want to promote. And I do say at times, I like your work. And if someone leaves me, then maybe I'll have an opening. And
how much, you know, without, you know, we won't mention prices or anything, but how much of sales are in the gallery and how much is online? Or even in between?
A mix, actually. With, as I mentioned, I have my own gallery website, which I get inquiries. Some are real and some are not. Hmm. In the same way as I have a site, it's called Artsy. It's like Etsy, but it's just fine art galleries and things like that. And there is a fee. You know, it's $4,000 a year, but I make more than that. And there are inquiries from all over the world. Some are legit, again, some are not. Hmm. But it's pretty good. You get a lot of out there. You know, yeah. The web is, as we joked about the World Wide Web, it's a really helpful tool. You know, and then when I post a new artist or a new work on there, they have rotating for a day or a week. They will rotate brand new posts, which is always helpful.
Cause yeah.
And they monthly give me an analytic thing that tells me the hits of which artists have gotten hits. And
that's valuable.
Yeah, yeah. And it is. Although one of the funniest things is I have one artist who's down in Baltimore, actually. And I've known him for a while. And he's got the same name as a British artist. And they're going on to my site thinking it's the British artist. And so I never get any inquiries for sales because they realize it's not the right Richard.
You know?
But he's happy for the... You know.
And we want to make sure that people know your website is...
It's called bcbart.com.
Yeah, very easy.
And you can go on to Artsy, A-R-T-S-Y, and look at things there. The Artsy one is a little bit easier. It's a little bit user-friendly. And so every show I have, I post gallery views and things like that, you know, panoramas, things like that, of current shows. Sometimes pictures of openings, things like that. It's the main site is, I update it, but it's easier to, it's just the Artsy one, I can do it in seconds. That's the other one, it's, you know.
And we were talking a little bit earlier about the Hudson scene and gallery crawls and, you know, I think Hudson tried to do like first Fridays or first Saturdays.
Yes,
and was not successful. And because Hudson is rich in art galleries. And,
and a lot more than, yeah.
And I think for people who, they like to go to many openings.
Oh,
at once.
Yes, yes, yes. It's, and we try to coordinate, you know, it's initially we informally contact and say, is this going to be your Saturday? You know, from 6 to 8, 5 to 7. And we do that occasionally. And it's nice. I remember, and then things like, I know Zach Fourier doesn't have a gallery and Jeff Bailey closed, unfortunately. But 1 year we all had same openings and we all said, let's get some pizzas, and, you know, and the backyard was available in Hudson. And so hundreds of people were getting pizzas from Scally's.
That's great.
I just, Scally's, you better, you know, I just plugged you guys.
All right. Maybe they can be an underwriter. Hello.
Like those race car drivers. I'll have to wear a shirt that says, we deliver.
Well, you know, I was in Austin, Texas at a gallery, and they were selling shirts with their gallery name. It was, I'll say it, Yard Dog. And so I have one of their shirts, and it's a nice graphic T-shirt, which, you know, I have a Helsinki T-shirt, and I kind of like promoting places and things like that.
Yeah, I've gotten companies send me things saying, wouldn't you like your logo on, you know, a pen or something like that, pencil or pen? But the funniest one that I got was a pocket knife.
Mm.
So it's like, what are they thinking? It's an art gallery. You're giving out pocket knives.
Well, a paper box cutter, maybe. You know, as you're
still
opening
no.
a package.
Still no.
Pencils
and pens are okay.
I mean, I was thinking earlier also, you know, when we were talking about pop art, and I myself, and we were talking East Coast, West Coast to some extent, and I definitely see, in my opinion, a difference of point of view in art East and West Coast. And
oh, yeah, yeah.
Especially when I think back to 50s, 60s, 70s, I'm a lover of graphic designers.
Mm-hmm.
And their ability, and sometimes it goes into actual artwork. You know,
mm-hmm.
You might be designing a logo, but then you can make a beautiful painting
mm-hmm.
That looks similar. And I just love that kind of artwork.
Yeah, it's like, again, it's going to blur between art and music, but an artist that I show, John Fox, was reading a book by, it was called The Moor's Last Sigh, I think, or The Moor's Sigh by Salman Rushdie. And I realized the cover was done by him.
Hmm.
And so I contacted the author. And then the next moment I was talking with him in Bath in the UK. And we've done two shows. And he actually, first time he came over to America in the gallery and did a performance, a spoken word with that. We projected images on the wall. It was the first time since 1979 he had done anything live in America, and the gallery was crowded and packed, jam-packed, and it's actually, you can find it on YouTube, because people, you know, it's these days, everybody's got a cell phone, and it's got a camera and a video, you know, and then they get home and post it to YouTube, and that was pretty good. It's still floating around there somewhere.
I also like one of your artists, Lindsay Hogg.
Michael Lindsay Hogg, yeah. Again, it was a friend of mine that we did some sort of private art dealing together, and he said he had a friend named Rick who was a lawyer, who was an artist as well, and I went and looked at Rick's work in Manhattan. I really liked it. He wasn't ready to show, but he said, meet my brother-in-law, Michael Lindsay Hogg.
Hmm.
And Michael showed up one day with some art, and it was really funny.
Yeah.
It was really good. He had a wry sense of humor. And he, again, is known primarily as a film director. He was the guy in the 60s, that got the Beatles up on the roof to do that last ever concert called, Let It Be.
Let It Be, yeah.
Let It Be. He got that. He did an early Rolling Stones. He did actually a Rolling Stones Rock and Roll Circus video, and he did The Normal Heart, a play, actually, for Joe Papp. And he's done all over the place. He did, for the BBC Masterpiece Theater, he did Brideshead Revisited with, was it Jeremy Irons? It was,
mm-hmm.
you know, a long...
The first one.
Yeah.
BBC.
Evelyn Waugh, that was the author. Again, he just showed up. He was actually living on... at a weekend house on Allen Street, and he just came in the gallery one day and introduced himself, and I said, I know your work. And so he's been in group shows, and I do have some things up now, and he sells very well, and
it's very playful in a way.
yes and a little bit of satire, a lot of satire actually, and not naive, it's very sophisticated. To the extent that, again, out of the blue, I won't mention a name because he doesn't want me, but there was a fairly wacky film director that bought a painting from me, of his work, and it was like the painting was of a musician and a donkey in a suit, you know, something like that. And
I think I know that individual, but I won't mention who that is.
His latest film was a cartoon about dogs.
Yeah.
I don't know his name.
No, I don't either. But
Michael knows him very well, and it was nice to, I didn't meet him, but I spoke with him on the phone. So that's nice. You get to meet, you know, you get to, these people come out of, from, and as you know, in Hudson, it's a popular town, and people are, you know, these days, it's, there are people walking down the street, you know, the same way as I think I told you, when I was living in the 70s on St. Mark's Place, it's like, one winter, I'm going out of my building on the way to Pratt, and I see this group of guys walking up across the street, and I say, holy blank, it's the Clash, you know, because they were doing the Bonds thing, Casino. They've had a long stint, and I was like, I didn't go over and meet them. You know, I didn't run across the street.
Yeah.
I didn't want to invade, you know. But that was cool, you know, to see, because that was the time in the neighborhood. You'd see, going back to the 70s, I'm digressing, but you'd see the Ramones, you know, you'd see the Dead Boys. I mean, they're geezers if they're still alive right now. But
no, I am, because I was in Manhattan in the, arrived in the mid-70s and worked a lot in advertising photography and mm-hmm. did movie, you know, we did movie posters. So, mm-hmm. you know, meeting people of note was fairly easy, and you know, I don't have any autographs from anybody or anything like that. It was, you know, I'm just doing my job, and even on the street, you know, I would, you know, see Soupy Sales and say,
I have Soupy Sales autograph.
Hi, Soupy.
I met him. He signed a poem. Again, it's like,
yeah,
you know, Black Tooth and White Fang.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. No, he was very nice, actually, very witty, and actually, I met him because two of his sons were in a band with David Bowie, and he was just there to tell jokes, like to warm up the band, to relax them. That's how weird it was. That was the 1980s, things like that. And
Well, you've probably seen Hudson change since, you know, in the last 15 or so years.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I was sort of likening it to the East Village, where you'd see people, and it would be okay when, you know, someone was at your gallery and at an opening, and you go like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
I didn't need to talk to them. I knew they weren't going to buy. Yeah, they were just here for that. It was nice, you know. It's, maybe they did buy. You know, a lot of times they did buy. Sorry.
Well, I love going into galleries and also window shopping here in Hudson, because mm-hmm. I need to be inspired.
Yeah, and it's a great opportunity to, you know, some people are not going to buy, but they come in and it's an education. You know, I can, if it's a downtime, I can talk with them,
yeah.
you know, about what's involved with this work. And no, it's not a photograph. It's a very realistic, you know, picture. I have one artist that's in a state that I represent, Ching Ho Chang. And he's in the Hirshhorn. He's in the Whitney. He unfortunately died fairly young of what was not called what it, you know, it was called cancer, you know, but
yeah.
it wasn't. And it was great because when I go to his sister has the estate, and when I, it's a